Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. Got Paul Woodcock with me in the studio.
Oh, good morning, Kevin. Thanks very much for having us on the show this morning.
No trouble, mate. Look, you're well known in the local area. You've got a lot of very successful local businesses. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your sort of story and the businesses that you're involved in.
Well, many of your listeners probably already know that my father-in-law originally built the Wanneroo Botanic Gardens. So I sort of came into it by default a little bit. I married the middle daughter in the family. When my father-in-law actually got sick and had a heart attack, I was actually one of the only family members that was in town at the time, and we stepped in to help them look after it. I always loved gardening. I was super passionate about the place, and we sort of ended up taking it over from them. We bought it off them in 1995.
Yep.
And slowly developed it. Obviously, we felt that there should be a food offering there at some point. Back then, we were out in the middle of nowhere at that time. You know, Burns Beach Road was a dead-end cul-de-sac road that went down to the beach there. Joondalup Drive didn't exist.
Yep.
You had to get to us from Wanneroo Road. So, you know, I think the nearest place was the hardware store was at Wanneroo, and that was sort of the Wanneroo Township. That was the nearest anything, yeah.
What was the Botanic Gardens, was it just gardens back in the day then? Because obviously I've only been here sort of 16 years, so I'm not familiar with what it was.
No, my father-in-law was actually a landscape architect, when he came out from Holland, his qualifications weren't recognised over here, so he couldn't sort of get a job in that field, so to speak. And he always wanted to build his own mini golf course, so it was actually designed and built as a mini golf course, and basically he built his dream. He built similar things in Holland with his father, and so he just set about to build a mini golf course. Him and his wife Hanukkah. Hanukkah's still with us today. She lives up in Joondalup, and is a regular, frequent visitor to Leapfrogs.
Yep. I mean, having a bit of vision, you know, having a bit of vision to what you actually want to do with the area and where you see it going. You know, it takes a sort of leap of faith to actually follow through on that vision as well. And sometimes, especially having a European background, sometimes that, you know, sometimes people see a concept elsewhere and they bring it to Australia. And is that very much kind of what happened?
Yeah, very much so. And what you saw in the park was he bought a concept from Holland, obviously. Mm-hmm. He was Dutch. And, you know, things like the tracks, they originally made them, they were actually clay tracks, which was great in Holland where it was raining and cool all the time. But in Australia, the tracks dried out within about 30 seconds of the sun coming up in the morning. So very quickly, the tracks had to be transferred from clay to rubber because it just didn't work. Also, the trees, he planted three of everything when he planted the park because in Holland, there's pretty much a three-month growing season.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to have a lush, thick park, you needed to plant a lot of trees. So he bought that context over here. And we've got a nine-month growing season, so very quickly the park became overgrown, and I was the worst son-in-law in the world for chopping down a lot of his prized trees. And even today, I still have to cut them down because there's just so many trees. We don't have enough light in the park a lot of the time. So
I've been along to the premises. I mean, I live locally, and I've got young children, so we come to the premises quite a lot. But I know that there's the pictures on the walls of, you know, that sort of that building stage and that journey. And you know, it's great to see the history of how it was all put together in the early days. And you were kind of a little bit thrown into it then, based on someone being ill, as you mentioned. Yeah.
I was actually a signwriter, so I'm originally a signwriter. I did that for 10 years before I pretty much run the sign shop with as the foreman there. Yeah. So I was quite entrepreneurial, I guess, as a kid. I was the kid that was out collecting bottles off the rubbish to cash them in and collect my money. And I bought and sold things all the time. So I was very entrepreneurial as a kid anyway. And so I guess it was sort of almost a foregone conclusion that I sort of end up working for myself. Mm-hmm. And then I started to work for myself. I quit working where I was working, and then I started to work for myself. And then that's when the opportunity to take over the business originally started. And then we built Leapfrogs in 96. So a couple of years later, we put the original Leapfrogs up, which was just sort of a 90-seat restaurant, which had two electric fryers. And a little tiny Roband hot plate.
And you must have, I mean, you mentioned that you seen that there was a need for an eatery as such.
Yeah.
Did you, I mean, now fast forward however many years, it's not just an eatery, it's a large restaurant, it's a fully functioning restaurant, it's very well known in the local area as well. Did you think that that's where it would end up when you first sort of started that?
I guess not really, because originally it was very difficult. So when we originally put it up, obviously council regulations and things are very, red tape is very thick around the world.
Just say it.
So when we originally put it up, we actually the original Leapfrogs actually wasn't called Leapfrogs. It was the Garden Cafe at the Wanneroo Botanic Gardens, because we weren't allowed to actually have a front door to the road because we didn't have the zoning. It was a rural zoning, so you couldn't have a front door to the road, and you weren't allowed to advertise it to external customers. You could only actually have people come and visit it that were coming to the Wanneroo Botanic Gardens. And so it was just called the Garden Cafe.
So you couldn't advertise it then?
No, I couldn't advertise it at all. Couldn't have a door to the frontage. It took 5 years to actually get that approval switched out so that we could then actually have a front door.
What would be the reason that you wouldn't be allowed to?
Because of the zoning, we were only allowed to have an ancillary use restaurant. We couldn't have a standalone restaurant.
Right, okay.
Okay, yep. It's just the way it was back then. Now we on the property, we can have an antenna mast, mm-hmm. an art gallery, a accommodation or a restaurant. They're the things that we could put on that property under the zoning. So, you know, obviously you could go to council and get the zoning changed, but it's a lot of work involved in doing that. And that was the way it was back then. So that's, and then when we actually put the front doors in and actually got the approval to actually have it as a standalone restaurant, that was when we changed the name to Leapfrogs.
Yeah. And I mean, it's grown from strength to strength over that period of time. And you're well known in local areas for having the Christmas lights we were talking about earlier as well. And I've got Mark Gill with me. And Mark, you're part owner of the business and you're the general manager, is that right?
Yeah, we've come in. We're lucky to. Our journey started. My wife went to school with Paul's wife, Nicole, back in Wanneroo. And before that, I was a little creature. So, yeah, and then we looking for something after 10 years down there, looking for something. And through conversation and word of mouth, and Paul said, yeah, I'm looking for someone. Yeah. Had a hospitality background. I'm a chef background and run big venues. I was hotel background before then, Sydney Olympics. And then, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Someone take it to another level and big and busier. And I think we started about 70,000, 80,000 is where Marky Salinas come in.
Yep.
He's a manager when I come in.
And I mean, when you look at the growth in the area itself, like the city, you know, the city of Wanneroo, but that everything that's happening with the bridge that's been built there and the growth, it must be a growing population in our area. There must be
huge growth in there. The numbers, I'm not sure, but Wanneroo is one of the fastest growing areas, I think, in the state.
So. Did you have the foresight back then between you? Did you think that the area had the potential for growth? Did you evaluate it? Did you do due diligence and look into it? And
I wouldn't say I was very technical about it.
I did have
a vision to actually have an iconic cafe in there, or iconic restaurant in the local area. So that was, I suppose, my long-term vision when I put, you know, started working through Leapfrogs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason that we sort of bought Mark on board was because, you know, we had, obviously as we got bigger and we had different business operations going, I wasn't doing anything really well. And so I thought, oh, let's bring somebody in that can actually really manage the cafe well.
Yeah.
And it's been a fantastic addition with Mark and Karen coming. They've been with us for nearly 10 years next year.
Yeah.
And it's gone in a blink of an eye. They've made great partners. We've had a great time. It's been a great journey for both of us.
Yeah.
I think it's been great for the business as well. You know, Mark is a bit of a personality in the area these days.
Yeah. No, well, that's when you both came in earlier. Mark was the one I recognised because Mark's the one I've seen in the restaurant.
Yeah, I'm down the back.
You're hiding in the back. Hey, hiding in the back.
Look, I'm only here because Mark Salinas is here.
No, look. Well, I mean, I want to talk through a bit more of the journey and a bit more about Leapfrogs. Tell us some of the challenges and tell us some of the fun things that happened during the course of the journey getting that business up and running. There's a big smile. There's big smiles.
We've got to go back to 50 years, haven't
we? Yeah, well, whoever said there's money in food probably lied for the first part of the journey. I think, you know, I basically woke up one day and decided to build a cafe restaurant. And zero experience, none. Well, my grandfather was a chef. He worked in the Merchant Navy, but that's about as close as I ever came to any kind of food industry. So I knew very little, actually nothing, would be the truth about doing it. So it was very much a learning journey. And because we were only allowed to open to the guests that came into the park, it was a very expensive journey as well, because we basically had to staff it all day, but we didn't have enough visitors during the day. So we eventually morphed and started doing functions. So we had a few people request weddings and things like that. We started doing weddings a bit, but the midges were a bit problematic on the edge of the lake there, and we had one wedding that absolutely got destroyed. Hope they're not listening. My apologies. It wasn't my fault. The midges actually came into the restaurant in like fog form. Yeah, because it was actually originally the cafe actually just didn't have glass at the windows, just had flywire, and the midges could get down the gaps between the brick wall and the flywire frame. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, once we started opening at night, that became a massive, massive issue. So that was definitely a journey from things like that. We ended up putting windows in and blocking the holes up. That solved that problem so we could open up at night. So, and then we eventually morphed into opening in the evenings. And that's when leapfrogs, as everybody today knows, it started to become a much bigger and better business. You know, when it was first young, we always had staffing. We had more problems than you could break a stick at. In fact, one morning I decided that the chef didn't turn up, so how hard could it be to cook breakfast for everyone? And I'll never forget it to this day. The people came in, they ordered 8 different things off the menu, and I didn't even know what hollandaise sauce was at the time.
You probably never had Google back then, eh?
No Google back then, no. That was a pretty tough morning, that one, I can tell you.
It's interesting, though, because it's, you know, I think for people listening that are looking to start a business as well, you don't always, you know, it's obviously a lot easier if you know everything about the business you're going into. It obviously makes it easier for you, but sometimes taking the punt and actually just having the courage to try something new that you maybe don't know about, and learn as you go. There's a lot of learning as you go in business, and hearing your story about that, and even just making the hollandaise sauce is you don't need to know everything about the industry that you're working in, but you can get better at it as you go along.
Oh, definitely, yeah. The whole thing is a learning journey. I'm still learning today, and you know, I'm 25 something years in, and I learn something new every day. It's changing. The world's changing fast, and that changes the way in which your business has to operate and the environment. I mean, obviously, this year with COVID, it's just been just a massive transition for everybody. Mm. You know, everybody that comes in, we've got thousands of people coming to the venues at the moment, and everyone has to sign in with the COVID app.
Yeah.
Well, even that in itself is a new thing that we never had to do before, and it's got its challenges with it for training team, getting people to be aware of the fact that they've got so many different choices in how to use their phones and all that sort of thing. Some people are scanning, some people are using the Safe app, some people are writing on paper. It's every day is something new in business, and I think that's what I like about it too. It's it's not the same every day. I'd get bored too quick.
Yeah, it's the old thing. Every day is a school day, isn't it?
You know, absolutely. Yeah,
learn something new every day. And Mark, you obviously came into the business. You had the hospitality background, so you brought that sort of experience to the table as well.
And basically, the kitchen was never haven't changed from when we used to do 300-400 meals to now, where we put another pizza oven in a couple of years. We do up to 1,000 meals a day now through leapfrogs, which now we're peaking pretty heavily now. At Christmas, I went in last night the kitchen, the dishwashing area, and going, oh no, that's really sad. It's like this high, it's like a mountain there.
Said to Paul off air, I said, I tried to get booked in on a Friday evening with my wife, I couldn't get booked in. So there you go.
Yeah.
Now that I've got you in as guests, I'll need to get booked in though.
Definitely from a marketing perspective, I think marketing is a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about.
The social media side of things is a double-edged sword. So if you do a good job, everybody tells about it. If you do a bad job, everybody tells about it. I think the social media has really changed the dynamic of how people have to operate restaurants.
What were you doing, though?
Like, well, in the old days,
practically,
we used to do Wanneroo Times advertising.
We did a lot of TV.
We did a little bit of TV. We did Wanneroo Times and pamphlets and all those sorts of things back in the day.
The older sort of methods of letterbox drops and things. And
Obviously you have your mailing lists and those sorts of things. So for Christmas, we'd use mailing lists for functions and things like that.
And did you notice the return on investment when you were doing that? Did you notice the traction of people coming to the restaurant?
It's very difficult to test and measure those sorts of things. Back in the day, we used to run competitions like you're doing on here.
Yes.
And then you can see whether you're getting feedback. So that was one. one way of doing it. It's particularly if you were using the Wanneroo Times or something like that. You could put a buy one, get one free in there, and that would tell you whether it was a lot more difficult than today's measuring. We have a young guy, Eli, that does all our marketing these days, and he can tell you exactly how many people clicked through, how many people opened the advert, completely demographic specific. We can market to parents with two kids that live in 5 kilometres of the area.
Very targeted.
Very targeted, very, very specific. Mm-hmm. Obviously, using MailChimp and all those sort of databases, you're building massive databases on people these days.
Because that's something that, as business owners, it's getting bums on seats, essentially, it's getting people in the door, and that's something that, especially when you've got a bricks and mortar store or a restaurant or, any facility, actually getting people to come and be aware of the premises, you can sit there waiting on people if you're not proactive, I guess. So it's finding ways of bringing them to you.
Yeah, look, at this day and age, if you're doing a good job, everybody hears about it. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a bad job, everybody hears about it. Yeah. So your options are to only do a good job.
Turn up every day and do your best and make sure you're consistent. Yeah. Moving forward, obviously you've grown that business and then you've moved into other things since then, Paul. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
After a while, I got really busy having the restaurant and the Wanneroo Botanic Gardens, to the point where I didn't have any formal training in sort of business or management or anything like that. I quit school at year 10 and when it became a sign writer, so I was sort of learning on the job, learning as I go. And I just found that I was just super busy all the time. And I woke up one day and I thought, man, how do these guys run multiple businesses? I thought, I must be doing something wrong because I'm just way too busy. And I thought, someone like Kerry Packer, he's got truckloads of businesses and he doesn't seem to be as busy as I am.
He seems to be on the telly. He seems to be on the telly all the time or something.
Yeah. So I thought to myself, I'll get myself a business coach. So yeah. I got a business coach.
Even after having had a business for a long time as well, to interject a little bit, you had that prior business, you had that for how many years before you got the coach as well, just out of curiosity?
Oh, probably 10 years.
Yeah. So you've had a lot of business experience prior to taking the coach on as well.
Yeah, I learned the hard way though. I thought getting a business coach would be an easier way, but it turned out it wasn't actually that much easier. I just meant I had to do more work. I had a guy come visit me weekly on a Friday, and it was super interesting because after visiting me for about a month or so, he came to me one Friday and he goes, okay, Paul, this week your homework is to go away and then to figure out why it is you're so busy and then come back next Friday and tell me why it is you're so busy. And I was like, you're kidding me. I'm paying you a lot of money to tell me why I'm so busy, not for me to figure it out. I thought if I could figure it out, I would have done it by now for sure.
Yeah.
And the strangest thing happened was that, because he changed my focus to actually be really, I suppose, intently looking for why it was I so busy, I had this blinding flash of the obvious by next Friday. That the reason I was so busy was because when there was one person in our organisation, there was me and one other guy that started, and I solved their problems. I got everyone to bring their problems to me, and I would solve them. I'd help. I was a helper.
Yeah.
And I was good at solving problems. So it seemed natural for me to get to everybody to bring their problems to me, and then I'd solve them. Mm-hmm. And so once we got to a larger organisation, I had 30 people bringing their problems to me because that's what I taught them to do.
Yes.
And I was flat out busy all the time. And there was no processes and no systems in place to actually have those problems solved. Mm-hmm. So after that, my business coach actually helped me to set systems in places to actually be able to have the business manage itself a lot better. I'm still not super good at that, but I've got other people that I pay that are good at that now to put systems in place.
But you need the structure, don't you?
Yeah, 100% you need a structure. And as you get bigger, you can only do so much as one person solving and helping everybody else. And eventually you've got to have a system and people that are aged to be able to, help themselves.
I think there's a lot of people that start out in business that their nature is actually to help people, because That at the end of the day, most businesses are customer facing and they're customer service environments, and it's probably in your nature. That's why you do it, because you like to help and you want to help people and you want to do something that helps people. And then that sort of organically goes into when you're managing and running a team, that you start to help them. You help them, you help your customers, you're helping everybody.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to help yourself.
Well, and when you start helping that much, you actually become a hindrance. People don't grow. They actually end up relying on you. And I found was that actually once I sort of released people to actually do their job and do it properly, they grew and I didn't need to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. And literally within 12 months of having a business coach, I was pretty much unemployed at my Wanneroo Botanic Gardens Leapfrogs business. And that sort of gave the opportunity for us to actually take over the maze, which is now Outback Splash. That's sort of what opened the door. I was like, oh, what am I going to do next?
Because it frees your thinking?
Because it freed my thinking, mm-hmm. and it just gave me the time and the space to be able to do those things.
Yeah. Do you think you would have, had you not had, so let's just use the term free your thinking, had you been helping people, helping and busy, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. do you think that you would have done sideways steps into, or vertical steps, probably in your case, into other things, into other businesses?
I don't think you could have. You just, yeah, I was just too busy. You know? Obviously, at that point, I had young kids as well and a wife, and I was, struggling to keep all the balls in the air at that point in time because it was, I guess it became quite obvious that, our business is also by nature, weekend, 7 days a week type businesses. So it became very important that we started planning our life. Specifically and deliberately. I mean, that was one of the things that I, tried to harp on to Marky, and I'm still trying to harp on to Marky about, is he needs to plan his holidays a year in advance.
Yes.
Because as a business owner, you just get swallowed up in it, and the year's gone past, and you think, oh, dear, I didn't take any leave this year.
Yeah.
You know, and if you plan ahead and be deliberate in it, then, you're much more likely to take the breaks and actually have a balanced business family, a more holistic life.
And I think the word you use, deliberate, being deliberate, being disciplined, and actually putting those things in place and setting time aside in order to do that, I think that's obviously very important. And it's interesting to hear you talk about it because there's some people that are maybe that way inclined, but I'd say the larger percentage of people are living the exact same journey as you're discussing right now, whether it's a small business or whether it's a medium, You always go through that process where you're feeling time poor and you're busy and you're trying to wear all the hats of the business and do everything. And I think the important thing, listening to yourself, is that you actually being able to free your thinking and then move on to something else and have another business running at the same time that's very successful, that might not have happened had you not went through that exercise of having the coach potentially.
Oh, definitely. I mean, all credit to the guys that taught me. I mean, I don't know if you know, say the same names, but that was actually through Action Business Coaches a guy called Cameron Rogers that actually, taught me a lot, and then I went on to add another one later on. Jamie from a company called Stratosphere.
Shout out to Cameron.
Yeah, shout out. He wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for those guys. And also a guy that was super instrumental in my early business life was actually my lawyer, Murray, Murray Smith. He was the one that taught me to goal set and a lot of those sort of foundational things through another business that he had on the side. I think as a business owner, you've got to do the journey with other people.
Yes.
It's critical that you've got good people on board. The fact that Leapfrogs is what it is today is all credit to having Mark and Karen on board. Mm-hmm. I'm only a small piece of the cog at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And without everybody doing their bit well, it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's interesting to hear about having the team around. We know the business, we know the Outback Splash business that you're involved in, but was that the first idea, going back to off the back of the Leapfrogs?
Outback Splash, well, as it was known back then, was called the Maze out in Bullsbrook. Obviously, all of our businesses, funnily enough, are 19 kilometres apart on the same street, just on opposite sides of the road.
That's convenient.
Weird. And another weird thing about it is they all three of them opened in 1981 originally.
Oh, wow.
Quite coincidental. But yeah, so Outback Splash, previously the Maze, that was an opportunity that came up. A couple of my friends actually pointed it out to me. They saw it on the... one saw it on the paper, I think it was, and they sort of said, oh, and I was like, no, I haven't got time to do that. I'm already too busy. But eventually I drove past one day and I thought, wow, what a beautiful property. And I'd already realised that, the Wanneroo Botanic Garden site was actually quite small relative to the population growth. So I saw an opportunity there, and I also thought that the maize site was probably the only other site which had big trees like we had at the Wanneroo Botanic Gardens. That Doug, the guy who originally built it, had spent half his life planting trees there. And if you're going to have a good theme park out, obviously on the hinterland a little bit there, you need shade. So I just thought it was a great opportunity. But once we bought it, interestingly enough, it wasn't anywhere near as busy in the summer as it was in the winter because Ballsbrook's hot. Yeah. And I didn't realise that. I mean, there's literally 5 degrees difference in temperature minimum on any day between the Wanneroo site and the Bullsbrook site.
Wow.
And frankly, the sea breeze, you know, gets there late and has gone real early. That was why we ended up deciding to put some water in. So we ran it for a couple of years, and then my brother-in-law and his wife, Phil and Ursula, they started working with us. So they became partners in the business of the maize at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided that because it was pretty hot out there, we'd add some sort of water attraction. We started out just looking at, you know, little splash pad type things that put sprinklers up, a bit like they had at Whistle Stop down at Busselton, which used to be a little miniature train track. And then we went to a theme park conference. Well, that was the beginning of the end in terms of how we ended up with a water park.
Where was the conference about?
It was in Queensland.
Yeah.
It's Alara. It happens every year. And it's basically all the big operators from all over Australia. Go there, meet and do training and all sorts of things. It's actually a super good conference.
Yeah.
Get really valuable learnings.
How did you learn about that? Did someone tell you about it? Or?
I couldn't remember off the top of my head now. I think probably through Douglas Campbell, who used to run Great Escape down at Hillary's. He was in a lot of that. He was in a lot of those areas.
Because it's that's a big thing to have, as you said, a theme park. You know, that's a massive a massive investment. It's a massive business, essentially. You know, a massive risk as well.
Oh yeah, it was a little out there at the time. Still is a little out there.
And it's a fun thing to have, I guess. You know, it's quite a fun business to have. You know, it's a lot of joy can come from it, I'm sure. So
Look, I mean, I love it. It's been a hobby and a passion of mine for a long, long time, I guess. Yeah.
So you go to the conference, and what's happening at the conference?
Oh, well, I sat down for breakfast at a guy, and he happened to be a theme park designer by the name of Alan Griffiths.
That's risky.
And he's like, oh, I designed all these water parks, you know. He goes, most important thing you need to know is that you need to start with the end in mind.
Yes.
So don't just build something like hodgepodge, he said, because it'll just always be that way.
Yeah. Is that because you're always adding on to it?
Yeah, because you're always adding on. So anyway, I sort of talked to him for a bit, and I said, all right, will you design me one? So he went away, and I paid him a lot of money to actually design Outback Splash, as it's known today.
Yeah.
But, of course, we didn't have any context, and we didn't have any budgets. We didn't really have anything. We just thought, what could we do on this site? So we came up with a plan, which we now know to be flawed, because obviously we've got a finite number of visitors. We've got, you know, there's all sorts of things about wage cost and labour cost and operating, you know, lazy rivers are not real flash. Everybody loves them, but in terms of actually the labour cost to actually have a lazy river running and the electricity cost to make it run, they're not really economically viable. So there's things like that were in the original plan that we had to pull out because just physically wouldn't work, even though it looked like an awesome plan.
So it's not just about the design and how it looks. It's obviously the efficiencies and the return on investment for you as a business owner as well, and you know, managing the costs of certain things. But you would never know that to start with, I guess. You know,
That's right. Once again, I didn't know anything about water parks, and that was how we. So we did this master plan, and then we then we're going to build this little piece as a test puzzle. And so we built what's now called Splash Island, but we actually called it Outback Splash, just the actual little original playground that we built.
Okay.
So we bought it from India in lots of sea containers, like a giant Meccano set.
Yes.
And Phil and my brother-in-law and the team, and we actually hired a whole pile of backpackers, and we spent the whole of the winter season building this with qualified engineers from India who came over, who hardly spoke any English. So between the Italians, the Germans, the Indians, it was one wild, interesting winter.
Yeah.
But it was great fun, and then we opened the Outback Splash, and it was just the craziest days. Like, so many people turned up to check it out.
And how did you get the word out about that? So going back to the marketing stuff we're talking about earlier, how did that come about? Like, how did people become aware of it all of a sudden?
So back then it was through media releases. So it was picked up by pretty much everybody at the time. It was, you know, it was quite a notable thing.
Because we spoke off air, like, I mean, it's a, you know, take my hat off to you. It's a fantastic venue, first and foremost. I've got young children, and I think certainly in the northern suburbs and in Perth in general, there needs to be more for families, more activities for families to do. There's always a requirement for it, I believe, especially as a dad. Come the weekend, you want something to do with your children, you know. It's not an easy thing to do. And we spoke about it off air. It's not a 5-minute decision financially, obviously, but just to actually get something like that off the ground in the area, it's not as simple as probably. Well, I've learned a little bit more about it today, but it's not as simple as just saying, that's what I want to do, I've got the money and go away and do it, is it?
No, definitely not. It's, you know, and probably I was naive when I started. That's probably why I started it. And maybe if I knew now what I knew, if I knew then what I know now, maybe I probably wouldn't have gone down that road. But maybe I would have. You know, that's the way I'm wired, I suppose, at the end of the day. But, yeah, there's a lot of regulation. Obviously, you know, we're about providing safe family fun. And safety is the number one priority when you've got things like, you know, water slides and water, and you've got height, you've got kids, you've got all sorts of things going on. So, you know, making sure the park is safe is absolutely 100%, you know, our focus all of the time. You know, the rides and things are really secondary to that. You know, it's a big animal. Even just planning, getting through council, I mean, you know, if you look at the site, it's a non-conforming use. It was, it comes back from a historical planning perspective, so it was there, so it can exist, but of course when you start adding to it, then you've got issues surrounding that. It's actually, you know, it's now in over the years the planning and everything's changed, so it's in a high risk bushfire zone. You know, there's so many things about the site that actually make it difficult to do development on. So every time that we put in a development application, it's quite a lengthy and laborious process. Although now we're actually a lot more established, it's actually becoming a lot easier. Obviously, council's keen to have us continue to grow and develop. And like you're saying, you know, everybody loves Outback Splash. It's certainly getting easier as we've gone on. But certainly in the early stages, everything was a journey.
And you'd need a lot of stamina. Like you'd want, because you're going to have, you know, doors close on you to a certain extent. So you need stamina to keep focusing on what you want to achieve. How did you do that? You know, how did you?
I often tell people, because people often ask me that question, and I think you know, there's not anything that we haven't applied to have built over all of our venues over the many years that actually doesn't exist today. And I think no is actually really just rephrase the question.
And you've
just got to keep rephrasing the question and narrowing down the parameters to be able to
that's
work.
That's an entrepreneurial thing, isn't it? You know, that that's, you hear no, and it's, and there's never no such thing as no.
But a lot of the time it's because you get a no because it actually just doesn't fit in that particular box the way you asked that question. And it's not, you know, I don't even blame the guys at the council on that. You know, they've I understand we've got to have rules for rules' sake. But certainly there's, you know, opportunity to work with them, but it does take time. And I think if you've got the time, which obviously we've had over the years now because we've been doing this journey a long time, you can just keep chipping away, and eventually you can get close to or similar to what you asked for in the first place, which was a no.
And it must be very rewarding to see, you know, to as a business owner, you know, there's a lot of rewards in business, for irrespective of all sorts of business, there's rewards to be had. But certainly to drive past a venue like that and see that you initially put it together with your Indian friends and your brother-in-law and everybody else that you said, you know, that must be quite rewarding. It might, you know, to drive past it and go, I built that, you know, we put that together. We started, it's still mine, but I started that, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. I've someone else said that to me, but I don't really look at it like that. It's just like a hobby. It's just something that we're doing. You know, it's just like that's what we do. You know, it's just like you run a radio show. Well, we've got a water park. It's just the same. You know, it's like
a wee bit different.
I don't really look at it as anything sort of.
Maybe you need to put a radio within the water park. Between us, we might have an idea in the cards there. But no, Paul. Like, you were someone I've wanted to speak to for a long time. Obviously, I had Markey on the podcast a while ago, and Markey owns two local cafes, but he always spoke very highly of you. He spoke very highly of your entrepreneurial spirit, which I think is extremely important as a business owner, not just to have the business skills, but to have the spirit and the vision and the energy and the drive to actually keep achieving and keep moving forward. And Markey spoke a lot about that when I had him on the podcast. And he obviously worked alongside you guys in the early years at Leapfrog and learned his trade. And Mark's got a little bit of his own story to tell, and hopefully there's some, maybe you can sort of tell us a few things about Mark along the way. But between the three of you here, you're all successful in business. You've all got stories to tell, and I think it's very important to sort of have a chat about some of those things. So, Markey, we'll introduce you to the show. Good morning, Markey.
Good morning.
We had you on the podcast a while ago, talking about your cafes, and it was actually the most popular podcast. There was over 900 downloads we've had.
Wow,
so
that's amazing.
So Markey, tell it, like, you know, you obviously know Mark and Paul very well. Tell us about how you know them. Tell us about your story and your businesses and your experiences working alongside these people as well.
Yeah, so, well, I started at Leapfrogs as my first management position after finishing TAFE. Yeah, look, Paul taught me everything. I was only young when I first started Leapfrog's Cafe. I was 20 years old, and everything from there, I kept on growing. And as a mentor, I call Paul as my mentor. He taught me a lot. So I wouldn't be opening up two businesses without him. I still give him a call these days saying, oh, Paul, how do I do this? And yeah, I did ask him, how do I fit holidays in owning up a business? And he told me plan a year ahead, which is,
And have you been doing it?
Yeah, I have. Well, I was supposed to go to holiday to Korea and Philippines this year, but then COVID hit. So you know, it doesn't really matter. Then we're traveling, going around Perth or WA, so it's great. Mm.
You've started your own two local cafes in the last couple of years. And what things did you learn? I mean, I know we've touched on it previously, but what sort of things did you learn working in that environment and working alongside, you know, you said Paul was a mentor, but what sort of habits or what things did you see then, did you learn?
Yeah, well, I've got the two business, Iron Fit Cafe and Diesel Espresso Bar. Paul taught me a lot about leadership. And basically, it first started, we had weekly meetings, management meetings, and he even told me to get a huge canvas and post out pictures of your goals. This was my personal goals. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I had goals of, like, silly stuff like a Ferrari, a big mansion and a Hummer, which, hey, look, I did end up buying a Hummer, which was a bit crazy.
I always wondered how you ended up with a Hummer.
And it was, one of my lists I had, and also had pictures of, like, small businesses, which I really wanted to open. And when I was young back then, I didn't think of opening up a business. It was more I would love to work in the industry as a manager, mm-hmm. hotel manager. And since during the years, I've been at Leapfrog's for 6 years when I was working with Paul, and it more made me think of being a business owner than a, like, just staying as a manager.
Yeah.
So, it grew me a lot.
So like, the thought processes started then?
Yes, it did. And like Paul said, his business just keeps growing and growing. And Leapfrog's was just nonstop, from a counter service to table service to a massive function center. And I felt that growth. And I said to him, like, growing hurts, Paul.
Growing pains. Growing pains.
And it was a little bit of relief when Mark Gill came. So I went, oh, wow, I got some help with someone with a lot of experience, which is great, because I learned a lot from both of them, which, I was only young. Being 21, 22 back then, I had to learn everything because I didn't have any other experience but Leapfrog's. Mm-hmm. So Paul was teaching me a lot. Then I got Mark Gill, who had heaps of experience from, like, the brewery, Little Creatures, hotel. So, I learned a lot from them.
And it's, not just the skills as far as the hospitality skills and the customer service skills, but as you said, it's the business skills and learning those things. And you had your monthly meetings that you said with Paul that were very useful to you. I remember you telling me that Paul taught you about always writing things down. Having a notepad and writing things down all the time.
I still have a notepad with me all the time. This is the one thing that I got in trouble with when I was working at Leapfrog. That, Mark, have you done this? Have you done that? I'm like, oh, no, I forgot. He goes, write it down. Get a notepad, write it down, then cross it every time you finish it, which I still have my – no, I don't have a notepad. I got an iPhone now, so write everything down there.
Yeah, and you've done – how long have you had your cafes for then? You've had that a couple of years
or something? So Iron Fit Cafe, I have that – it's been 2 years now. Mm-hmm. Wow, 2 years. And Diesel Espresso Bar is coming to 1 year.
And what's the sort of things that you can pinpoint? You learnt lessons working with these guys. What's the sort of thing? Is there anything in particular, one thing that you can think of, I learnt that and that's helped me, or an exact thing? Can you think of an exact example of something?
Well, what I learnt from working at with Paul and Mark was you can't do everything yourself. Mm-hmm. You do have to delegate your jobs. That's why I've got a good friend of mine who is really good at coffees. His name is Kevin, mm-hmm. Kevin Gurong, and he's like the master of coffee. So I said to him, hey, would you like to come help me open up a cafe, which he did. And instead of me hiring him, I said, why don't you just get some shares and we can work together as a business partner, which I did. And now he's doing really great. He's working side along with myself. He also helps me. We both own Diesel Espresso Bar. and which we delegate the jobs together. So yeah, it's been good
working with Paul and Mark. You know, in the early days, were you were involved in some of the growth of those businesses as well? Did you see, or did you working alongside them? Did you see what they were trying to achieve? Did you could you identify it? Could you see it?
Yeah, definitely. With Mark, I did. He kept on saying, "Keep on bringing the bookings. Keep on."
Never say no, Mark. Don't say no.
I was keeping saying, like, it's full. The bookings are full. And he goes, bring them in. And I was the one who's running up the bookings and trying to find tables for customers to sit down. It was crazy.
Yeah, we changed from a chef that actually was like, no, we can only do 100 people a night.
Yes.
Who was Mark he started with. To then Mark came on board and said, no, we can just do as many as come in the door. Yeah, it's a big transition.
Just get the customers in and we'll deal with that sort of thing. Yeah. And see where it goes.
Yeah. And from a place where I started was counter service to table service, and we had live music, which was massive back then. We got a stage, a marquee, and yeah, it was great. But then I could stay at Leapfrog's like till the very end, but I thought, okay, I do need to grow. And I've been hearing that Mark, he worked in hotels, and I thought maybe I'll try hotels. So that's how it started. So I was with Leapfrog's for 6 years.
Yep.
And yeah, so I gave hotels a go, and the next step was Crown, which was the biggest hotel industry in Perth. So went through there.
Okay, what other stuff are you learning? You've been in business a few years now, and
yeah, well, I'm always learning. Now we've got Google, which is great. But yeah,
are you Googling how to do hollandaise sauce?
Yeah, it's true. It's actually true.
I would be if I could.
But yeah, I mean, I always keep learning. I keep growing. I don't say that I'm not the smartest person, but I love to learn, you know. So I always ask for help as well. People that I know, working a lot in the industry now, working from hotels, bars, restaurants. Worked in big places, convention centre to King's Park in Fraser's. So yeah, without starting from Leapfrog's, I wouldn't be here now, yeah.
You're involved with, you've got the gym attached to your cafe. Yeah. Both cafes, you've got the gyms attached to them, haven't you? And that's a slightly different different concept to a lot of cafes around the place.
Yeah, definitely. So I thought, I always wanted to open up a restaurant or cafe, but I'm always scared that, okay, it might fail. So I've seen a lot of cafes fail. They open, do really well in first year, then they, you know, they close down. So I needed something to feed through. So my cousin called me up. He's more in the gym side. He came back from America from 10 years and said, would you like to open up a cafe in a gym? Which was, I thought would be great because I could use his members to come to my cafe, which, wow, it turned out really, really, really well. We're expanding at the moment at Iron Fit. Yeah, Iron Fit and Junilab.
Yep.
And we just have 230 members over there. We're trying to shoot up to about 300 now because we're going to expand the place. Yeah,
I mean, obviously we spoke with Paul and Mark earlier about the marketing thing, and it really does for most new businesses and businesses ongoing. It just always comes down to getting the business, you know. Yeah. It really just always does, and obviously it's changed a little bit since because you've started in the last couple of years. The landscape's different as far as the digital's a bit more apparent, and there's other means to get the message out there. How do you market your business? What do you do?
Well, social media is really big at the moment, and We went to seminars how to do marketing and social media. And for me, I'm terrible at marketing. And that's why I got a good friend named Kevin, who's my business partner. And look, he loves to go on his phone, social media, Instagram, Facebook. So I said, look, you can do that, which it's been really great. So we bought the new iPhone with the new cameras. And every day we just have to keep posting every single day. Videos, stories, and people do look at him. Mm-hmm. It's funny. They come up to me, oh, I saw your story and you're selling this, or you're doing latte art in your coffees. It looks great. So that's how we found out, like, that social media, the power of social media is massive. So, yeah.
And it's doing the social media as well. It's a bit more brand awareness, isn't it? You might not get people coming in straight away, but you're getting your brand out there and that consistent sort of dripping tap sort of message, isn't it?
Mm. I think to Mark's credit, blow his trumpet for a minute.
Mark's very modest.
Yeah, he's very modest. Yeah, he's done it well.
Yeah,
you know, and I think in business, if you do it well, you'll see the benefits of it. And, you know, and if I'm driving down Joondalup Drive, I'll stop at Mark's place for a coffee over other places because I know he makes a good coffee. Yeah. And if I want a good hamburger, not hamburger, good bacon and egg roll in the morning, I don't know what Hannah puts in it, but it's delicious. And so I'll stop for it. You know, and I think you know that. Then that feeds the social media, and that feeds the reputation, and that's why he's doing well because he's actually doing a really good job.
Yeah, and you're building a community, Mark. Really, yeah. you've got community members and followers. And
We just had our Christmas party for our gym, and we had 140 people come in Joondalup Resort, and it got a little bit messy, but it was fun.
You were a bit seedy this morning when you came
in.
What do you enjoy about the business, Mark? You've got young family, you've got a little one, and your wife's an integral part of your business as well.
It's a family business basically. So my wife works as a chef, got my cousin who runs a gym, and a good friend of mine, Kevin, and we got Matt Smitty, who also owns the gym. So it seems like we brought the family together since we opened up the business. Then with Diesel Espresso Bar, how that happened was actually an accident. The owner of Diesel, Jim, he was a regular customer of ours at the cafe, and he just goes, "Look, I've got a gym in Joondalup. I really want a cafe in it. Would you like to open?" So that's how it started, and we went to that gym. They had more members. They had 800 members. It was a Muay Thai gym, Diesel gym. And we thought, look, they have more members. They've got kids program. Let's give it a go. So it was a gamble. But
Timing a little bit as well. Like somebody coming along to tell you that's there and that's available. And Paul mentioned earlier about one of his friends telling them about the maize opportunity and the opportunity there. Sometimes it's a conversation, or sometimes it's just being in the right place. To use a sort of cliche, but being in the right place at the right time. You know, and hearing what you're saying, there's an apparent theme there between what you said and what Paul said. And the family values, the family business, everyone's sitting here is involved in family business.
Yeah. My wife actually does the accounts for Blue Sky, and Mark's wife actually works on the floor. She's the functions coordinator.
Yeah, wow.
And then my son, Aaron, is the park maintenance at Outback Splash, and my niece, so Phil's daughter, is the operations manager at Outback Splash. So, yeah, very much ours is all family.
Yeah, and you would have learned values. You'd have worked in those family businesses with Paul and Mark, so you would have learned those family values, and then you take them into your own business, don't you?
Yeah, I remember that Paul's kids, they were small and young kids asking me for milkshakes and all that, and now look at them, they're doing really well themselves, yeah.
And where do you see your business going, Mark? What's your plans with what you're doing?
I still got my huge posters and books. I got big things, but look, I got to take it slowly because I've got a baby coming aboard. My wife is pregnant.
Oh, well, congratulations, Mark.
Yeah. Round two.
Well done. But shout out to Hannah then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
well done.
She keeps telling me, slow down, because, I still want to open up a bar, Korean barbecue, a lot of things.
A few ideas, but that's the idea creation, that's the entrepreneurial spirit, always looking for the next idea, always looking to innovate and... I'm sure you're like that anyway, but I'm sure you've also got that from the guys sitting alongside you as well.
Most definitely.
Look, we are running out of time, but Marky, first of all, just with your business, how would somebody find your business and get in touch with you if they wanted to find you?
Yep, so Iron Fit Cafes in Edgewater. Just look us up, Iron Fit Training and Cafe. And we also got Diesel Espresso Bar at Joondalup. And we're also attached to Diesel Gym.
And Paul, what about your business?
Just go to Google and you can Google Outback Splash or Wanneroo Botanic Gardens or Leapfrogs Cafe or Kerem Adventure Camp. They'll all come up. Hopefully at the top of the page if you're doing it well.
SEO. Hope you're paying enough for SEO. Now, look, guys, it's great having you on. It's been good fun. It's been good having three guests in the studio rather than one at a time as well. It's been a different dynamic for me, but I think there's a great bit of value there about, ideas and keeping going and, family businesses and freeing your thinking as well. There's a lot of value for people listening, and it's great to see the three of you having worked together, still friends and still running very successful businesses. And I'm very grateful for you coming in today. So thanks very much.
No problem.
Thank you.
for joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.